Welcome to episode 19 of the Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. This week, we will be talking about pyruvate metabolism, my initial thoughts about being back in the U.S., and how tendon reflexes work.
Okay, so biochemistry sounds like a really dry, boring subject, and it easily can be, because it's so detailed, and sometimes those words, they just feel like they're made up. But biochemistry is how everything happens in the body, and it's also kind of amazing, as long as you can find the amazingness in it. Today, we're going to talk about pyruvate metabolism. So glucose is the major starting point for energy in our body. In fact, we have several metabolic pathways that are just made to create glucose. We've come up with all these different ways that we can turn glucose into glycogen or break down glycogen into glucose, or fructose gets entered into that pathway, or, you know, galactose, or we have an HMP shunt so that we can use ribulose 5-phosphate. I mean, all these things that go into this metabolic pathway for glucose, right? Glucose, that metabolic pathway that we use, it's called glycolysis, and we use it to make some energy. But the thing is, it also gives us pyruvate. And pyruvate is this really cool jack of all trades in metabolism. It can do a tremendous amount of things. It's used for several pathways, all just kind of depending on what our body needs. For example, alanine aminotransferase, which needs vitamin B6, it's kind of in the name, alanine aminotransferase. Guess what it makes? Alanine. Alanine is an amino acid that carries amino groups from our muscles to the liver so they can be recycled. And then pyruvate carboxylase, again, also kind of the name, it carboxylizes pyruvate. And if you're a med student, it's really good to know all carboxylase reactions need biotin. Make sure to lock that in your brain. So pyruvate carboxylase, it carboxylizes pyruvate and makes something called oxaloacetate. Now, you might have heard oxaloacetate before because this uses energy. This reaction uses energy, but oxaloacetate combines with acetyl-CoA to start the citric acid cycle. And the citric acid cycle, the Krebs cycle, however you know it, TCA, this is an important energy-producing cycle that we use. It happens, and I think this is really, really cool. The citric acid cycle, it makes carbon dioxide as one of the byproducts. Guess how many times a minute a cell will go through the citric acid cycle? 12 times a minute. Now, that might not sound like a really special or magical number, but if you remember the average amount of respirations, average amount of times that we breathe per minute is also 12. It's because this citric acid cycle is making carbon dioxide, and that's where a lot of our carbon dioxide comes from. So they're correlated with each other. Another thing that happens to pyruvate is it gets dehydrogenated by pyruvate dehydrogenase, which, again, knowing the language makes medicine so much easier. Just look at the words, and it often answers what you need. Pyruvate dehydrogenase makes acetyl-CoA. Acetyl-CoA, we just talked about it, combines with oxaloacetate to kick off that citric acid cycle. Another really important thing to remember about pyruvate dehydrogenase, again, for the med students, vitamin B1, B2, B3, B5, and lipoic acid. Those are all cofactors for pyruvate dehydrogenase, for that complex. Because pyruvate dehydrogenase, it's actually a complex. Like, it's a bunch of things that happen. And there's three major enzymes. They're honestly not worth knowing. I just know pyruvate dehydrogenase complex makes acetyl-CoA, and that it requires vitamins B1, 2, 3, 5, and lipoic acid. Another thing that you can do with pyruvate is another dehydrogenase is lactic acid dehydrogenase. This one only uses B3. I'm sure for our layman out there, you've heard lactic before. Lactate, lactic acid. Lactic acid. This is what happens when we don't have enough oxygen to do anything else. And what else is important about lactic acid is, or lactic acid dehydrogenase, is it works without mitochondria. which, if you remember, mitochondria is, you know, what a lot of people like to think of. I know Jen likes to think of it as the, like, power station or the factory, the energy factory in a cell, because that's where a number of major things happen as far as energy metabolism, you know, molecule metabolism. So things that don't have mitochondria make a lot of lactic acid. So this is like a major pathway in red blood cells, white blood cells, the kidney medulla, the lens, the testes, and the cornea. So to recap, glucose goes through glycolysis and makes some energy, but it gives us pyruvate, which is this really cool jack-of-all-trades metabolism that can go through a tremendous amount of pathways depending on what we need. The major ones are alanine aminotransferase to make alanine to move amino groups around, pyruvate carboxylase, which needs biotin to make oxaloacetate. And that's used for kicking off the citric acid cycle. The other part that oxaloacetate combines with is acetyl-CoA. We can also make that from pyruvate. Pyruvate dehydrogenase, that complex, needs B1, B2, B3, B5, and lipoic acid to make acetyl-CoA. And then last, lactic acid dehydrogenase, which is vitamin B3, makes lactic acid, and this is what happens when we don't have enough oxygen to do anything else. Hope you found this informative and helpful, and we'll talk again soon.
Make sure you check us out on artofmedschool.com. We have a ton of more information, blog posts, any of our past episodes that you might have missed, as well as some really fun underwater photography that Mike has been working on. There's some cute photos of fish. So check us out on artofmedschool.com. All right, so being back in America is really nice. I kind of forget how nice America is until I leave and then come back. And I kind of felt guilty about it. Like, being guilty because I felt like I was just being pampered all the time. And I'm not exactly a big person that goes out and gets mani-pedis all the time and massages. And I'm not a big, like, I deserve to be pampered type of person. But being in America all the time is kind of like being pampered. And I feel, like I said, I feel kind of guilty about it. And what's kind of nice about it is that it's all these little things. All these little things that, like, you don't really think about until you're away for a while. Like, I was flying back and I get to the Minneapolis airport and the bathrooms are so clean. Like, you could eat off of those floors and not feel weird about it. And there's hot water in the faucets in those bathrooms. That's something that never, ever happens in St. Vincent. Like, I think you maybe remember how we were talking about how we have to turn on our heaters for our showers so we can have a hot shower. There's hot water everywhere all the time, and totally something I take for granted and don't think about how nice and how clean my hands feel until I get to wash my hands with hot water whenever I want. And this is a really big thing. And I think a lot of it is because I was working in a restaurant, but customer service, especially in the Midwest, is so great. You walk in, immediately someone says, "Hello, how was it going today?" And, like, they'll joke around with you. The lady that checks you out at the grocery store jokes around with you. Like, everyone is so nice. I know it's their job and they're paid to be nice, but I was managing a restaurant where it was their job and they were paid to be nice and they weren't. And so, like, it's been kind of glorious. And it was actually kind of funny that when I was living in Hawaii, all of my friends that, you know, were from other places, some of them were from Hawaii, some were from other places. They were always like, "Jen, you're always so friendly with the checkout person at the grocery store." And I'm like, "No, that's just what you do." And then when they came to my wedding, they were like, "You're right. They're all like you." And I think that definitely in the Midwest, we really like to talk to each other. Because I think that if you want to get all, like, philosophical about it, prairie people don't always have a lot of access to a lot of other people. And so we have to depend on each other to get things done. So anyway, people smiling and being really friendly. And then grocery stores where you can buy whatever you want, whenever you want. That's really nice. Like Target or even Walmart. Like the concept of Walmart is amazing that you can buy pretty much whatever you want, whenever you want. You can get into your car, drive there, and buy whatever you want. Like, and sometimes they won't have exactly what you're looking for, but they'll usually have a substitution that'll do in a pinch. And I know, like, I am liberal enough, I am informed enough to know that all of those things come at an expense, right? And that it is on the backs of really poor people in situations that are really terrible that we get to have those luxuries in the United States. I totally understand that. And I like to shop as ethically as possible and do things as correctly as possible. But it's so easy to forget how much of a luxury all of these things are. And it's kind of amazing. The other thing that is super easy in America is that you can get food whenever you want. Like, you can go to McDonald's drive-through at 3 o'clock in the morning and get a McDouble, even though a McDouble isn't my thing. But it's astounding. And I think that it's really important to spend time outside of your comfort zone, outside of the places where these things generally exist for us, so we can remember that these things are really nice to have. And also to remember that these things do come at an expense and that we aren't just entitled to them, but it's really easy to feel like you are because you're constantly surrounded by it. From a town in the middle of South Dakota of 10,000 people to, you know, your cities in that you can get 2-hour Amazon shipping. But man, it's a really nice place that I get to spend a lot of my time. So, that's kind of my, you know, my first initial impressions on being back. It's pretty wild, and it's the comfort and luxury that we live in. I know that at some point I will get used to it again, and I'll take it for granted, which is unfortunate, but I hope to be able to keep that, perspective as well. We launched our Patreon account. Please go check it out. You can find a link on our website or just look up Art of Med School on patreon.com. This is a great way to support us as we work hard to make the most and best content possible. You can find more information on our homepage at artofmedschool.com. And every little bit helps. Thanks.
So when you go to the doctor, often they're going to hit a part of your body with a hammer. And I know we all know that means like they're testing your reflexes, but like what are they actually doing there? What does that actually mean? So it's a test, like we said, to test your reflexes. It's testing your nervous system and to see if specific nerves are intact. We know for like the patellar reflex when they hit your knee, that's testing L3, L4. They're hitting your ankle. It's S1, S2. These are some common ones. The ankle reflex, patellar reflex, biceps, triceps. And when we see that they're intact, we know that the nerves that are sensing the hammer and the nerves that control the motors are working. So really quick and easy, the nerve roots, the common ones, are easy to remember for my med student friends out there. You can count them up. Ankle is S1, S2, patellar is L3, L4, biceps C5, C6, and triceps C7, C8. Now, I want to make sure to tell you that this is the information I have, but I've also found a lot of conflicting information on the nerve roots that are being tested, especially in the biceps, triceps, and some people throw in brachial radialis in that mix too. So just make sure you know what you think you need to know for your tests. You know what I mean? So anyway, basically, so how do they work? There's sensory nerves that are running back to the spinal cord, and we'll skip kind of the detail part of this and just work on the concept. But basically, it's like two branches, right? You have one nerve that runs up to the spinal cord, and that's the sensory, and then there's a nerve that comes back, and that's the muscle, right? Or the motor. So these sensory nerves, like all sensory nerves, they run back to the spinal cord to send information up to your brain, right? So that goes through like the spinal thalamic tract or the posterior column, you know, things that you learn about in neuroanatomy and probably don't need to know other than that. So most send signals to your brain so that it can process the input, decide what to do. Brain then sends information back to say, okay, this is how I want you to respond, right? Your muscle nerves, though, have a synapse in the spinal cord itself. So what happens is they're essentially, like the reflexes, they're essentially short-circuiting the path that goes all the way back to the brain. So the signal goes from the sense receptor in the, to the spinal cord, and then essentially jumps to the muscle nerve and then goes back out, or to the motor nerve and goes back out. So you can think of it, they call it the reflex arc. There's one nerve that goes up to the spinal cord, that's your sensory, and yeah, it sends information up, but then it also stimulates that motor nerve, which comes back down and causes the tendon reflex. So that could be the knee kick or whatever. And one of the reasons that we look at this is that it helps us understand if some sort of deficit that might be present in a patient is an upper motor neuron lesion or a lower motor neuron lesion. So if it's somewhere in the brain that they're having issues, the reflexes are going to react differently than if it's in the lower motor neuron or basically from the spinal cord on out. So in a lower motor neuron lesion, you would have hyporeflexia. That means that when we test the reflex, that it doesn't exist. In an upper motor neuron lesion, you have hyperreflexia. That means that the reflex exists, and it's actually reflexing. I'm going to say reflexing. It reflexes too much. So you do, so lower motor neuron, you hit the tendon for the patellar tendon, and you have hyporeflexia, so it doesn't kick. Upper motor neuron, it would kick overly too much, or it would even kick like multiple times. So the striking the tendon, what it does specifically is it causes the muscles to stretch, and that stretching activates a stretch receptor, or what's known as a Golgi tendon organ. It sees that the muscle is stretching, and it sends a stretching signal to the spinal cord, and the cord sends back the reflex, which is to contract. So when you strike that patellar tendon, that's actually causing your anterior thigh muscles, the muscles on the front of your thigh, your quadriceps, specifically your rectus femoris, again for med students, to stretch. And then the core, like they said, the Golgi tendon organ sends a signal up, and then the motor neuron sends back that, hey, you should contract. And so that's what causes the knee to extend, or for the foot to kick, because that foot extending out, that's actually the function of the anterior muscles on your thigh, those quadriceps, right? Now, once this happens, the brain intervenes at that point to put on the brakes and say, okay, you did it once, we're good. So you really should only contract once. In a nutshell, that's how tendon reflexes work. Sometime we might try going into more the neuroanatomy side of it with the specific fibers and everything, but I feel like that's a pretty good overview.
Thank you for joining us for episode 19 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. This week we talked about pyruvate metabolism, my thoughts on being back in the U.S., and how tendon reflexes work. Join us next time. Thanks. Our theme music, Urbanimatronica Wuya Mix by Spinning Mercata, is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way by St. James School of Medicine. Micah just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.